Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Raina Troy Hotline.
Alicia, Michael, what's going on?
We know you have takes. We have takes.
I'm actually surprised that your rant line, rave line, whatever, isn't completely full.
Why can't we just win a game?
Can I blame Michael Castillo for this?
Can I blame Bob Connolly for this?
Could I put on a zebra shirt and just go out there?
Scratch. Claw. Up against the wall.
Can't explain that what I'm feeling right now, guys.
Let's open up that rave line.
Woohoo! Oh, I can't believe USC has escaped the Groundhog Day existence and has ended the Helton era.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Random Troy Radio. This is the CarCast after USC's... Yeah, it's a lot of points that they gave up to... fewer points that they scored against UCLA at the Coliseum. In front of like 68,000 people, I think, was the,
there's a lot of people
the
there.
Actual attendance. We're here, not in the Random Troy Studios in Los Angeles. We're in the What's Brewing Studios in Los Angeles with our friend Jake Merrifield of the What's Brewing Show.
Go Bruins!
Okay, you're not supposed to press the button.
We are Hello, I'm here.
Your show.
Thank you.
People are going to tune out
if
you're misbehaving.
My bad,
here.
I'll button it up.
All right, good. I'm your host, Mario Garcia, along with my co-host, Elisa Daratola.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. We're all here to talk about SC playing that game, which, let's be honest, same game we've seen multiple times this year.
That's what we talked about.
It was the Stanford game. It was the Oregon State game. It was the Utah game. It was the UCLA game. In a weird way, it was the Notre Dame game, except that one didn't end in quite the blowout. SC loses this game by 29 points, give up 62 points to UCLA.
I didn't realize.
Chip Kelly now.
609 yards. 609 yards.
Yeah.
And it doesn't include the kickoff return.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
They gave up 9 touchdowns. Yeah.
Nine touchdowns.
Yeah.
62 points, which ties the most that SC has ever given up, which I believe is 2012 Oregon, 2013 ASU, and now 2021 UCLA. Mm. Two of those with Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly has now scored 50 points 3 times at the Coliseum.
Wowza.
UCLA gets the win. They now go to now have a record of 7-4. One game left for them. SC has 2 games left. They are 4-6. They got to win both of them for bowl eligibility. Let's be real. Does anyone want to see extra USC football this year? Probably not. For the athletic department, you probably want the bowl money. But alas, yeah. What do you have to say, Alicia?
That was bad. It was predictably bad. I think I just about predicted it, except for the 60-point thing. What more is there to say about the season? It's just a crap season with a team that has no mental fortitude, that just make, you know, physical and mental mistakes constantly. They catch up to it, you know. Having the drops that USC had on some of those drives was devastating. Didn't get help from the refs a couple times, but, you know, you could spend more time complaining about, like, the OPI and some of those other things if you didn't also have, you know, bad drops and bad throws and bad tackling and the whole shebang.
You could complain about Dante Williams and his settling for a field goal or two-point conversion management.
Yeah, it's just collective.
If those things mattered at the end of the day, and they didn't.
It just goes to show that, you know, one of the things that we've talked about with the quarterback situation was I think Jackson Dart looked much better as a quarterback, being able to play the whole game, but he clearly didn't fix the problems that USC had. So
I want to talk about that a little bit, because this was a game I said that this, I called you on the way home from the game, and I said this was one of those weird games where, SC loses by 29, but it wasn't really that much. We know that UCLA kind of opened up a can in the fourth quarter when SC had, they really won the game on that kickoff return, right? But it's a game in which SC had plenty of opportunities in the first half. They go up 7-0. They have this game plan where they're going to stop the run and force DTR to beat them, which I thought was going to be the right game plan. We talked about that in the preview. Zach Charbonnet was probably going to run all over SC. So you might as well force DTR to be the one to beat you, because he would be the one more likely to be prone to mistakes. Well, first two drives, first two passes, he throws two picks. What does SC do?
Nothing.
0 points off turnovers. First drive of the game, even before that, they stall inside the red zone. Two drops.
Two.
That would have been first downs to set up a first and goal. Two drops. They don't score. I would settle for a field goal. And you add on the interceptions that they get 0 points on, they could have gone up 6-0. They could have gone up 7-0. They could have got 21 potentially. Could have gone up 21-0. No, they were up 3-0. And then it just allowed UCLA opportunities to find a way to beat SC's defense, which if you give someone opportunities to do that, they're going to do it. And the dam broke, and UCLA was able to score a hell of a lot of points against SC. And when you're SC's offense and you don't finish off drives, you leave points on the board, you can't go tit for tat. You can't hold serve. And one of the things you and I were talking about on that the drive home, sorry, Keely. Yeah. There you go, Jake. You're joining along.
That's right.
Is that I had the realization today, not that this is like a profound thought, but SC's offense and SC's defense are just not compatible, because this offense is prone to stalls. They're going to stall. They're not going to get the most out of all of their drives. But the defense is going to give up the most out of all of their drives. And I think that in a lot of ways, if SC cleans up their offensive performance in this game, then it's a shootout. And it's a crazy Big 12, Texas Tech, West Virginia type shootout or whatever that goes deep into the 50s, and it's anyone's game. And it would have been Big 12 bad. It would have been crazy to watch, but probably pretty fun. And that's all you would have wanted out of this rivalry game. But, and that's without changing anything on defense. That's just if the offense makes DTR pay for those early interceptions. That's if the offense scores touchdowns on two of the drives in the third quarter that ended up stalling, the interception and the field goal they had to settle. If they just take care of their own business on offense without changing anything on defense, this is a shootout. But SC can't do it. And when you compare an offense that stalls like that with a defense that gives up literally everything, it's not going to work. This offense needs a defense that is very stout. They don't have it. This defense needs an offense that doesn't drop the ball on 3rd and 6. This offense is an offense that drops the ball on 3rd and 6.
Yeah, and it's funny, that opening drive I thought was incredibly emblematic of what's going wrong with USC, with USC offense, and what's going wrong with the UCLA defense. And that is, the game starts with that weird, confused, bobbled snap sort of thing, right?
Right.
They go back 2 yards, and then UCLA immediately starts to send tons of bodies on ineffective blitzes, and USC zips right down the field and then stalls at the end, ends up with 3. And it's like that, that's the worst of both sides of it.
Yeah, and these characteristics of the offense, the stalling, the drops, these are the things that you saw with Keaton Slovis. So I think on one hand, you look at kind of like the movement of the offense in the third quarter when they were starting to get Gary Bryant downfield, And you're like, well, this is kind of fun to watch. It was so brief. And then the reality is, no, this is literally the same offense that SC's had against Stanford, against Oregon State, against Utah, when there were glimpses, the same glimpses of hope, put together with all the different stalls. That's the same stuff you had with Keaton Slovis, even with Jackson Dart. It's the same offense, which is why we talked all year that the quarterback change was not going to solve the problem as it stood.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, I think watching Jackson Dart run this offense is more fun because Jackson Dart is more likely to YOLO, but that doesn't make it more likely that you're going to win. We saw him YOLO the ball down to Gary Bryant Jr. several times, YOLO the ball to Taj Washington several times, and sometimes it worked out.
Yeah, it still
and
took 2.5 quarters for SC to get to that point.
Yeah.
But they weren't taking that many shots downfield.
Yeah, but once they did, it was like, okay, this is fun. But then you also end up with a bad interception, and that's the way that you just sort of go. So it's not a schematic thing that USC changed. It's just that I think Dart just started pushing it downfield because he was pressing because they were trying to keep up with UCLA. And
it kind of played into what UCLA was trying to do as well, because they're sending all those bodies kind of daring you to throw it downfield.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
and, you know, two out of three times it works for SC, but then that other time you get a pick.
Well, and if you're UCLA and you're going up against a true freshman quarterback who doesn't have a ton of experience in the long run, yeah, I think that's the right way to go. You're going to get burned a couple times, but also you're going to have Dart throw high a couple times too, and you're going to take advantage of those things because he's a freshman who doesn't have a lot of experience. And I think that's one of the frustrating things about USC is that, you know, USC's defense has been very bad this year, but they've played some teams that don't have particularly good defenses either. UCLA's defense has been vulnerable to a lot of teams.
Oh, yeah.
And it's frustrating because this should be a USC offense that's capable of making UCLA's defense pay. And that just isn't what happened. And you see it in other games. Stanford has been vulnerable. And, you know, Utah's turned out to be a really, really good team since Cam Rising came in. But there's just, it's the frustration of watching a team that has so much more potential and can't seem to put it together. And in past seasons, not being able to put it together has resulted in sort of like an 8-5, sort of 9-3, 7, right. You know, well, that disappointment. I think you're seeing this year that what happens when it completely falls apart, you can't get anything going. And we talked about lack of mental fortitude. I think this team just can't take a punch. And UCLA got a couple punches in, and that was basically that.
Well, we've talked about before that, you know, under Clancy Pendergast and even under Todd Orlando last year, this was a defense that was going to hold teams about 24 points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's just the flood.
And if you hold teams to 24 points, an offense that scores 27-ish a game is going to win games, right? Periodically, like they're going to be in those games. But when the defense doesn't do their job and you need to be perfect, an offense that is imperfect is only going to put themselves in a position to lose games like this. The frustrating part for SC is that you go up in these games and, like, how is it that the defense ends up being the worst of the two defenses literally every time? Literally in every single game.
Oh, no, the way that this defense is falling apart is...
Like, the odds would be that at some point SC would, you know, get the better of somebody defensively, and it just has not happened week in and week out. You know, the Colorado game and the Washington State game and the San Jose State game were three outliers. Every other game has just been absolutely atrocious for this defense.
Yeah, I mean, this defense is bad. Is it the worst USC defense that I've seen this century? Arguably,
I think that performance was the worst. Okay, so we talked about it after the Oregon State game. I said that was the worst defensive performance I'd ever seen. How do you not say it after that one, after the UCLA game, when Zach Charbonnet has a stretch where he ran 27, 13, 11, and 12 yards?
He's just a baller, man.
He had one of my favorite plays like of the UCLA season. And that was one where it was that short and goal situation, and he runs through and gets stopped, and then somehow flips his body into the end zone and stays on his feet, by the way, while he's at it. Like, that was awesome. Yeah. I just want to say that. Go Sharps.
UCLA has some playmakers. Zach
Charbonnet scored 9 touchdowns. 9.
Charbonnet is talented, and DTR is just he's a high ceiling, low
mercurial.
Floor. Yeah, mercurial.
His floor is like hell, and his ceiling is godlike.
Heaven. Yeah, yes. Yeah. And when you got a defense as bad as USC's this year, like that's what you're gonna invite him to have a godlike performance, and I think that's what we saw from him. In this game, but it's just frustrating because DTR is also, like we said, he has that low ceiling, that low floor, mm-hmm. and USC saw that in the first few throws, and we talked about this, it didn't capitalize, and that's the failure of this team. It's just they failed to capitalize on those moments that their opponent was vulnerable, and when USC has been vulnerable, they've just given up everything and the sun.
Yeah, if USC is able to, like Michael said, get that best case scenario 20-0 lead, all of a sudden, UCLA played a game last year against Oregon State where they were down big and then they battled back, but they were just always too far gone. Or the game against Colorado last year for UCLA. Mm-hmm. And it's like, the one thing I do like about Chip Kelly's Bruins, even though maddeningly, they've lost too many goddamn games, they do. They fight. They fight all the way through, but sometimes when you get them down too far, they don't have enough in the tank.
And that's one of the things that I was very frustrated by is.
But 3-0 is not an insurmountable lead, and neither is 10-7.
No, so. and you give a player like DTR the chance, and this UCLA offense too, I think, to gain confidence, and suddenly they just are absolutely rolling. And Chip Kelly knows how to take advantage of a team when you're rolling. And I think that the frustrating part about watching USC this year is, A, USC has no sense of that kind of, now we're rolling and going off, against an opponent. But it's just like, you would give yourself an opportunity if this game was close, if it was 35-35, like, you put that pressure on DTR, not literal pressure of like your linebackers getting home, which, by the way, every time USC blitzes, it's incredible how they don't manage to get pressure, and that's a big problem. But like, force the other team to have to be great. And I don't think USC has forced anybody to have to be great this season. And that's why the record is what it is, because this team has just been a whole sort of mess.
I'm going to ask you a question right now. Greg Dulcich, without looking it up, what do you think his stats were? Because I remember thinking at some point in the game, wow, SC's doing a good job against Charbonnet. They're doing a good job against Dulcich. They're not letting those guys beat you, and those were the ones that I was worried about for SC going in. How many catches and yards did Dulcich have?
I want to say 4 catches for 87 yards.
To me, it's always a trick question, but I would say somewhere between, 3 and 5. He always has less catches than I imagine and way more yards than I figured.
He had 2 catches.
Woo!
They were for 37 and 38 yards.
See, that's a typical Dulcich day.
Well, that's a good tight end. I mean, that's the thing about tight ends is.
Yeah, and then Michael Ezekie, 1 catch for 26 yards.
Yeah, it's
he's a wide receiver now, but yeah.
They don't have to be volume.
Or no, he's 10.
They don't have to be volume. It's just when they get open, when you are able to find them, you get nice chunk plays.
A little side thought here. Alicia, do you have the tight end of the future? Because I saw that dude running around out there, and he seemed like he was pretty good for SC.
McCree?
Lake McCree looked really good.
Lake McCree.
That one that he caught, but then he didn't catch it. And I thought it was a good opportunity.
Yeah, that
was a terrific play
by
him.
That's tough.
It
was a hell of a play to even make it look like a catch.
He looks like a player that's droolable.
It was one of the plays in which SC converted a third down and should have converted the third down.
Yeah.
Okay, Jake.
But I'm not going to hold that one against him.
No, not at all.
It's the Nixon drop at the 5-yard line.
It's Washington's drop.
It's the Gary Bryant Jr. drop in midfield. Those are the ones.
To answer your question, USC has had tight ends of the future on the roster forever.
Yeah, Nails, baby.
Well, okay.
And the guys that Malcolm I can't pronounce their names.
Malcolm Epps looks good. Michael Trigg was injured. It looks like a tight end.
Daniel
Wanababe?
Yeah. Lake McCree, Jude Wolf. All these dudes can play that position. USC is just absolutely miserable at getting something out of their tight end. So
I know.
This is probably the best tight end game of the season.
I would argue. Yeah, I'm sorry I'm bumping around or skipping around a little bit. But early on against, talking about how UCLA kind of exploded, and Michael's talking about the two catches from Dulcich. But I was really impressed. I think I might have said this on my show too, but I was really impressed with how tight the coverage was on the Bruins early.
Because
I'm used to seeing guys running wide open and then just...
And they were later.
Yeah. Like that stopped. But I was impressed by that. And I was also impressed by the SC running game early on. Like, I know you guys have been talking up Keontae
and Vi.
But they were both very good at, getting extra yards, a la Charbonnet, and then also like spinning out of some of the contact. Like, I was very impressed with those guys.
Keontae Ingram, and Vi has been my guy from day one.
Yes.
So I'm like, Vi is my dude. I love him. But there's something about watching Keontae Ingram that reminds me of Ronald Jones in the sense that it's just really gratifying to watch him with the ball in his hands. You don't know which way he, like,
it's one of those things where I feel like it's lazy. Until you watch him, and you're like, no, but he really does look like...
Yeah, there's something else.
Like, it's lazy to pick the Texas guy with dreads, right? Yeah. Like, that's lazy. Yeah. But then you watch him, he makes cuts just like him.
He's a slightly bigger, beefier Ronald Jones.
He seems very smooth.
Yeah, very
super smooth.
I mean, whether he's turning or whatever, it's just smooth.
So here's my
bummer,
dream.
By the way. Sorry.
Go ahead.
A bummer for Keontae Ingram fantasy owner. That he never gets the touchdowns because Vi would come in and clean off those drives.
Yeah.
But so Keontae, I believe, still has a season of eligibility if he wants to come back to USC. Oh. And one of the things that I really hope, and I don't know if he will come back. There's always an argument for running backs to just go to the NFL if they can. But if he does come back, like, my dream is that USC brings in a new coaching staff that brings in an offense that you want to sort of build your... Keontae Ingram is a player that I think is worth building your offense around. And I would love to see USC do more with him next year if he chooses to come back. Like, that's my hope, my dream. I don't know if I
can't imagine he comes back.
I
think he's got enough film that he, as a running back...
See, more or less film than Miles Jack did. Do you remember? I don't know if you guys were inside UCLA joke was that was what Morris said when Miles Jack decided to go pro after he got hurt. He's like, I don't know if he has enough film. I think he needs to hang around a little bit longer. We're like, whatever, Mora, double middle fingers.
Yeah, it's just he has been super fun to watch. I think he's been I'm not going to say the crown jewel of this season because that's Drake London.
Yeah.
But, I think the interesting thing is I'm curious what Drake London does for this game.
Oh, I'm. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Maybe he helps.
Well, maybe it's last year's game all over again. Bastards.
It could have been like that could have been. It could have been the wrinkle that I'm not. Obviously, he would have helped, but I don't know. Does he being there help SC finish off enough of those
There's
drives?
There's no doubt. There's no
where
doubt.
It would have been the shootout that SC is in.
No, he helps USC finish off a couple of drives, but USC's. I think we saw this team with Drake London have these same kind of performances where
that's what I'm thinking.
They just can't follow through in the red zone. So I think that Drake London.
But then maybe it's 28-24 at the half, or maybe it's, you see what I'm saying?
Okay.
It's
like, I still think UCLA pulls away in the second half either way.
I hope so, but I would say that the thing that I was struck with this USC offense, I was surprised at how good I thought Ingram and Vi were. I was surprised at how well, at some of the playmakers, and obviously USC, we got tons of these great recruits, but there wasn't that one guy that was just abusing him. And, the ball got spread around quite a bit by the Trojans, and there wasn't that one guy that could just dominate and look down on the poor little Bruin defender,
a la
Mike Williams or something like that. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, it wasn't that guy.
Because we literally saw Drake London do that to UCLA last year.
That's right. That's what I'm worried about.
He would have done it again this year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would have made a difference. I'm not sure it's enough of a difference.
Yeah, I'm not sure it would have been enough of the difference because, like you said, he was there for the Stanford game. He was there for the Oregon State game. He was there for the Utah game. And the same thing happened. And, yeah, I think that we've talked about it before, and it's really a moot point.
Moot point.
That, you know, if and I'm not exactly Clay Helton, but if SC was slightly better coached, at not much, like, it just has to be slightly, right? I think they get more out of this season as it goes down.
How could they not?
How could they not? Because I think that the Stanford game, the Oregon State game, the Utah game, the Notre Dame game, the ASU game, the UCLA game, all of those games had flashpoints where the things didn't go SC's way. Where you could look at it and say, well, if they don't waste those first two drives after the picks against UCLA, what would it have been if they would have started the game 17-0? Yeah. What would the Utah game have been if they would have finished off their drives early and gone up double digits against Utah on the road? Like, does Utah on the road crumble at that point? What would it have been against Stanford if Drake London, you know, doesn't catch the pick six or catches the ball that was the pick six? Yeah. If you know, was it Gary Bryant Jr. in the back of the end zone, right? Like, those things, what if those things would have happened? And I'm not saying that, you know, just one coach changes those things, but you look at the games in which SC, you know, were thoroughly outcoached, and this is surely another one, but the ASU game, the Notre Dame game, all these things, all these games. Part of me is like, you look at how bad the defense is, this team is lucky to win four games, and then you look at the way games played out, and part of me is like, you don't have to change.
Unlucky not to have won six already. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's a weird dichotomy there, and again, I think it goes back to talking about how the offense is not compatible with the defense, but again, this is the problem with the offense in general, with Graham Harrell's offense, because there's so many empty calories that you can talk yourself into this BS that, mm-hmm. Well, if they just would have finished off those,
But that's part of the identity.
Yeah, but the identity is you have to say that every week. And when you have to say that every week, then that is the problem. It's not the exception anymore.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because even at, four and six. It's funny because you guys, you objectively watch the game and you're like, this offense ain't great and this defense is dreadful. Right. But you look at the statistics and it's still a darling of the machines, relatively speaking.
Well,
right?
S&P Plus still liked USC's offense the entire time.
It's insane to me. And so part of me, when Michael's saying, well, the defense isn't a good match for the offense. And I'm like, well, yeah, of course they're not, because they both are shitty. Yeah. You know. But at the same time, there are things there for coach speak to prop them up. And yeah, that's where I think that you're right, Michael. I mean, you do need an overhaul. You do need to have an approach that is complementary, but at the same time, like, you also need to get rid of all the empty calories, just like you said.
But this is why I think this is also the case for this is a, yes, you need to tear down the culture and all that stuff. But
I don't buy the idea that USC needs a full-blown 5-year rebuild.
But yes, but
that's not the case.
Chip Kelly's good at that.
That's what I'm saying.
Just call it a year zero. You're fine.
This is the case, is that you look at this and you're like, okay, well, if you just play out these games a little bit differently, yeah, maybe they go 7-5 this year. With maybe if Clay Helton doesn't get fired, maybe they go 7-5. It wouldn't have been enough for him to keep his job beyond this. And maybe for that reason alone, it wasn't worth seeing that out. But maybe that's what would have happened, right? Maybe. Who knows? Whatever. But the point is that what SC had, like, in some ways, it feels like they're way closer than others. And it is on offense. They feel considerably closer on offense, which is still incredible, given that this is an offense that doesn't score 40 points. They never score 40 points.
Because this offense it just improve your red zone percentages essentially by 10%, and suddenly you're an offense that scores 35 points a game.
Well, you improve your red zone percentage by fractions, and you're adding 7-8 points more per game. And if you add 7-8 more points a game, you're winning like 3-4 more games per season.
And the other thing, too, just on the topic of the rebuild, like, on offense, that's where you can turn things around very quickly too.
Right.
You just get a big time wide receiver and have them be a freshman phenom, which USC has produced constantly.
Right.
Like,
but I want to take us back to 3 years ago when SC went out and hired Cliff Kingsbury, and that ultimately turned into Graham Harrell. What did we say? We said that all you needed to do was that if the defense stayed the same, the defense literally stayed the same, that all SC would need to do is if you went to an air raid offense and if all you scored was 5 to 7 points more per game, you were going to win 2 to 3 more games a year.
Mm-hmm.
Which I still think is true.
Well, they didn't
score
that
much. But they didn't do it.
Yeah.
They did not make... Yeah. They didn't do that bump up.
Graham Harrell is not Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah, and I think by the numbers, literally, I think from 2018 to 2018, it was like a 5 point, or 18 to 19, it was like a 5 point difference. But it's not, it wasn't consistent, right? And we know that this team has not been consistent on offense under Graham Harrell because there was one good month, and that was in November of 2019, and everything else beyond that has been
not
a
good
slog. And SC's inability to score 40 points really, I would say consistently, but pretty much ever.
Yeah, ever.
And SC has too much talent not to score 40 points. Mm-hmm. When you look at around the country, how seemingly easy it is to score 40 points, because this is the era in college football where teams are scoring more than they ever have before.
Yeah.
And so, like, I feel like I can give the defense... not when they allow 62 points, but in general, I can give the defense a little bit of a breather in the sense that I will take a defense that allows 22 points a game. When you compare that to the B. Carroll defense is laughable, right? But in 2021, yeah, I'll take a defense that allows 22 points a game because a school with talent of the caliber of SC should be able to have an offense that averages 35 to 40 points a game, no problem.
Yeah.
And SC doesn't.
Coming into this game, the magic number for UCLA's defense was 30, right?
Yeah.
As bad as UCLA's defense is,
well,
if you get the offense to score 30 points,
yeah,
and the defense to hold them to 30 points, you're going to win.
You asked me during the... I don't know if this was on air, and I don't think so. You asked me what the rot index would have been for this game,
mm-hmm.
and you were like, what's the rot index again? I'm like, oh, it's the number of... Basically, if you score this many points, it's what SC would surely win. So it's what is the number is essentially what is the maximum the defense could allow for the offense to do their thing. And I said 50.
Yeah.
So if SC scored 50 points, they should win, right?
And if SC had scored 50 points...
they would have lost the game.
No, I think if SC scores 50 points, well, I think you're more
surely
likely...
Surely it would have played out differently.
I think you're more likely to have UCLA also scoring in the range of 50 points, and then it's just like, you know, whoever has the ball last.
Instead, it's 609 yards.
Yeah.
It's 9.2 per play.
Yeah.
21.8 per completion, and 6 yards per rush. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But by a point in that third quarter, like, USC was clearly, it was done. So there were a lot of yards and points that came up.
The third quarter is wild, though, because there was a point in that third quarter where it looked like SC was crawling back in this.
Yeah,
and then they gave up
the kick return was the dagger. Yeah.
Yeah. It just, I'm so over this team. I'm done. I put on Twitter, like, at least we're 1 week closer to having a new coach and the season being over. So
I'm so glad you guys get to see that Cal game, though.
I would rather not. Honestly, like, I wish that had just been a forfeit.
Yeah.
Not just for bowl eligibility, but like...
Like, you have BYU and Cal now?
Yeah, BYU and Cal.
That's rough.
We have two more games. BYU and Cal.
That's rough.
My hope is that the head coach is announced before that BYU game, but... before the Cal game, but... I don't know.
My hope is that the Bruins don't do what the Bruins do, and that is... blow the game after the SC game invariably.
Cal.
You know how many times?
Well, Cal just blew out
Stanford
in
big game.
Yeah, Cal maybe is a little bit more dangerous than they look early.
All right, can I go to us? Just to wrap this up, this CarCast, we're going to wrap it up early. What is there to say at this point, right? Even though, please, send us your emails and your calls. RantTriumphFanside.com is the email address, and the phone number is 213-373-1USC.
Suck it, Raina Troy!
Okay.
He did it to me last podcast, so I did it back to him. I said, Suck It, What's Bruins Show,
on
the last time, and we did that one first. And then he had the nerve on the second show.
It was by mistake, because once I say the word suck it, like,
I know.
Immediately.
It's okay. I forgive you. What's Bruins Show comes out. I forgive you, Michael.
All right. Anyways, I just want to go on a slight soapbox.
Please.
One of the things that SC fans loved to hate on Clay Helton about was the quarterback decisions. And really it stems from Darnold against Max Brown, and people completely held that against him, and he was never going to get over it, right? I want to talk about the Pac-12. Look at the Pac-12. Utah just absolutely demolishes Oregon tonight, right? 38-7.
The ducks, they're wimpy. They don't even have teeth.
Stupid ducks.
What's that from?
The Mighty Friggin' Ducks, bro.
Oh, that movie sucks. They all suck. Anyways, the movies I'm talking about. You look at Utah. They're 8-3 now.
Did you say Utes?
Are you having fun with your soundboard?
I am. Finish your point.
Okay. No, you look at Utah, and you know, everyone wants to bash on Oregon for dropping the ball and the Pac-12 for eating itself and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Why are we not talking about the real reason here that this is a problem?
It was not a battle of 9-1 teams or whatever?
It should have been.
Yeah.
Utah.
I'm right there with you, buddy.
If they just picked the right quarterback at the beginning.
Yeah.
If they go with Cam Rising over Brewer.
Dumb Kyle Whittingham.
Do they lose? Does this BYU team that we see in November, do they lose to BYU?
Oh, hells no.
Worst case scenario, it's a coin flip, maybe. Right? Do they beat San Diego State? Surely yes. Surely yes. They probably win both of those games. A road game at Corvallis, let's be real, an undefeated Utah team is losing in Corvallis. That's just what the Pac-12 is. But, you know, like, yes, Clay Helton may, you know, if he picks Darnold in 2016, maybe at the beginning, maybe things are different. But literally so many coaches make the same mistake.
Coaches?
And Utah has a chance, would have had a chance to go to the playoff if they would have just picked Cam Rising at the beginning. David Shaw. If David Shaw would have just rode with McKee at the beginning over Jack West, maybe they beat Kansas State in that first game, right? Like,
there was
so many different coaches picked the wrong guy.
There were coaches out there who didn't think that Joe Burrow was good enough to be their starter. Like,
yeah, this Urban Meyer, you can put a name on it.
Nick Saban has gone wrong with the quarterbacks. Like, you know, this happens.
It's hard
all
to pick the right guy. Yeah.
It's hard to know. So, yeah, I think that the thing that you need to avoid doing is exactly what USC did this year, is pick somebody and run with them. Don't do the bullshit of the two quarterback system unless you are doing a package for a quarterback that actually brings something different to your offense.
Yeah, and if you have a system that genuinely helps your quarterback, in a lot of ways the quarterback doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But sometimes it does.
Yeah.
Sometimes it
clearly,
does.
Clearly.
Yeah. And the only thing I say, and I don't want to crap on your point, listening to a lot of Bill Riley talk from Utah, right? And Utah was a pretty injured and banged up team those first few games. But yeah, now knowing what we know about Rising, that's what Riley was saying the first couple games when they started winning. It's like, oh, you can't really pin this all on Rising and on who's it, Charlie Brewer, you know, it's not really his fault. But I mean, the more of these victories come out where Rising is just a stud, yeah, he mitigates a lot of those problems. So Utah probably doesn't lose those games, or at least doesn't lose both of them. Or
it's,
all, you know,
it's also
all
about
them.
It's also about having a sense of who your team is going to respond to.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's maybe where USC missed the mark on Dart, is that, like, there's a chance that this team would have responded to Dart. And maybe Dart isn't making those dumb freshman mistakes in this game if he's been the starter, you know, for the last two games. Then again, he was injured. So, like, circumstances are not as simple as you can make it out to be.
To his credit, I didn't think he made a lot of freshman mistakes in this game.
No.
The two picks he had were aggressive, sure, but
one of them was bad. He throws into double coverage. It was just never there.
The first one was underthrown, but, like, they're not boneheaded picks. So you live and you die with it.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the nature of having someone like Dart play.
I don't know, though, with Slovis coming in with the history he had as the starting quarterback at SC, I don't know how
he could have made both those throws, too.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. I just don't think this is something that I want to impress upon people. Things are never as easy as like you think they are when it comes to decision making, whether it's personnel or
it's not always a binary decision.
Like, there's all sorts of other things that are going on.
Sometimes you make the right decision and it doesn't work out because you're unlucky, mm-hmm. and sometimes you make the wrong decision and it works out because you are lucky. And these are more like percentage sort of calls, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and you hope a coach makes the high percentage call most of the time, and is able to, you know, and is able to kind of be a leader. I mean, those are the two main
ingredients. I think the important thing is getting to the point where you're like Nick Saban, where you can make the wrong quarterback decision and you still are going to win those games because you've set up the rest of your organization to be so good that like that one misfortune or that one mistake doesn't absolutely kill you. Like
that'd be the dream.
100%. Anyways, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening, as always, to the CarCast. No, really, it's a garage cast because we're over here with Jake from the Butch Brewing Show. Jake, thanks so much for being here with us. Thanks for having us. Thanks for all of that. Yeah, you make our show better. We enjoy having you around.
Oh, guys.
Yeah.
That makes me feel all tingly. You're one of our favorite people. That's wonderful. And it's likewise for sure. Absolutely likewise for sure. So I'm glad to be here, and thanks for having me. And of course,
I'm happy that UCLA won.
Because I am.
Okay, you can put your soundboard down.
Oh, the one last one.
I was actively rooting for UCLA today, and it makes me feel dirty.
Oh, I love that one so much. It's beautiful.
Are you done?
Am I? I mean, I could go. I mean, you know how many penguin drops I have?
You're encouraging him now, Michael.
All right. we will see you later. And I don't know what we're going to do this week. It's that holiday with the really bad food coming up.
I love Thanksgiving.
Excellent food.
Bad food holidays coming up, so I don't know what we're going to do for a recording schedule. But
you can have Thanksgiving dinner over here.
Hey, wait, I need to talk to you about your... you guys do a cranberry relish that's different.
Oh, yeah, you need to get them from Sarah.
Yeah, I need to...
hit her up. Yeah. It's about the ingredients today.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.